Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started. You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go, live in Los Angeles, hour number two. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. I was thinking about this over the weekend, and then I started thinking it because the NBA camps were opening and Kevin Garnett got spoofed by David Letterman, and I was thinking about
Durant,
this.
Yeah.
I think people think I'm critical of Kevin Durant. I think he's the greatest scorer since Jordan. I mean, I'm better than Kobe, more unstoppable than Kobe. He's the greatest scorer since Jordan. I don't think he does other things as well as LeBron, but just pure scoring. I'm going to root for Kevin Durant this year. I know we're not supposed to root, but I feel so bad for him, having to put up with the nonsense of Kyrie Irving last year and this year, that I found myself sitting there thinking, I'm going to root for Kevin this year. I want to see Kevin Durant win a championship. And it's not, I think he made a mistake leaving Steph Curry. I said it. I didn't like it at all. I would never leave Steph for Kyrie Irving. But I'm watching him go through this nonsense, and I'm like, this guy just wants the ball. He just wants to play basketball and win. He was so borderline heroic in that series against Milwaukee, giving you 47 minutes, both ends of the floor. I find Kevin Durant, and you know what? He's a little sensitive. So what? Who cares? I go home and cry 4 days a week. Who cares? I want my athlete. If they're a little sensitive, Aaron got a little sensitive this offseason. Who cares? Just be great for me. Just be great.
I like an authentic personality. It doesn't mean I have to agree with
everything that
you do and say.
Right.
But, I mean, I don't agree with everything that Kyrie does and says, obviously. But, you know, I can appreciate the personality. But, yeah, no, I'm with you. Kevin was incredible in that series.
All right. So, I got to give you my Herd hierarchy. It's every Tuesday. I spend more time than any human should on a stupid top 10 list. But here we go.
Herd hierarchy.
Time is now. Let's go.
The top 10 NFL teams according to college. Number 10.
Dallas Cowboys, let's not overreact. Dak is 11-1 against the awful NFC East. And by the way, the Cowboys are 26-0 when they have more rushing attempts than passing attempts. So I don't think he's Mahomes, and he keeps winning divisional games. But the key is, you have to admit, the defense is faster than last year. They have 8 takeaways. This Dallas defense is rangier and more athletic. So I don't think they're going to be in shootouts every week. I don't think it's an elite defense. But when I watch them play, they are on the ball faster than last year and better coached. That's a top 10 team.
Number 9.
Raiders. Listen, here's what worries me. They've overcome 14-point deficits in 2 of their 3 wins. You can't fall behind in this league and keep winning. That worries me. And they got both the Dolphins and the Ravens at home. I want to see him now do something on the road beyond Pittsburgh in that anemic offense. 2 things. They finally have a pass rush. Finally. It's been a long time. They're generating one without blitzing. And number 2, you know how I think about Derek Carr. Only quarterback in the league right now, averaging 400-plus yards passing. And this is what veteran quarterbacks do, sprinkling it around. Sunday, 9 different targets. That's important because Green Bay feels totally dependent on Davante Adams. Derek is sprinkling it around the roster.
Number 8.
Arizona Cardinals. Listen, they're throwing for 300 yards and rushing for 100 yards every weekend. It's just a wildly dynamic offense coupled with a good pass rush. That's a good thing. That was the Peyton Manning formula. Peyton's going to score a lot of points. You're going to have to throw to beat Peyton, so get a pass rush. So Arizona, Steve Keim, the GM, they're scoring, they're pass rushing, and, I mean, you can say what you want about Kyler Murray. He's got a rushing touchdown in all 3 games. Like, that's part of his game. Let's accept it. He's good at it. He's a nightmare to face. I would not want to be a defensive coordinator against Arizona.
Number 7.
Cleveland, if you control the clock, you control the outcome. Second best rushing offense in the league. I do believe you have to play a certain way with Baker, but let's be fair. He's completing 72% of his throws. When He's in situations, play action with this offense. He's a very effective thrower of the football. Odell Beckham, good to see him back. He adds an over-the-top element they don't really have with Jarvis Landry as often. This is a very good football team. Ranking them 7, I went back and forth on 7, 6, 5, but here's why I put them 7.
Number 6.
Because I put the Chiefs number 6, who beat them and dominated them in the second half. I could have gone either way on this. Listen, the Chiefs have held a lead in 65 consecutive games. Let's not overreact. They have led every single game they've played for 4 years. Let's not go crazy here. But their defense right now cannot make situational stops anywhere, including the red zone. So I'm going to put them 1 spot ahead of Cleveland because they dominated them in the second half when they met this year. But I'm not sure if they met again, Kansas City would win in their current state.
Number 5.
The Packers, very good team. My concern is their offense right now is ranked 26th in the NFL, and Aaron's averaging 215 yards passing. They are unbelievably reliant on 1 great wide receiver, Devontae Adams. They have got to develop, like the Raiders and Derek Carr, more weapons. And I thought the Raiders were a little bit dependent on the tight end Waller for the first week. You got to give me other guys because the best coach teams will take a great tight end or a great wideout out of the game. But I really loved their win this Sunday, and I said even if they lost, it was the first time in 2 or 3 years I saw Green Bay go up against a highly physical team, and they were the stronger, more physical team. I thought the win had value beyond just the final score.
Number 4.
I know I'm totally overrating the Broncos. I'm going to admit it. They've beaten garbage teams. The teams they've beaten are 0-9. I will admit it. But I have a soft spot for Teddy Bridgewater. I have a soft spot for quarterbacks that don't make a mistake and understand via self-awareness, I don't have to win the games. This defense is fantastic. They solved their corner issue getting Kyle Fuller from the Bears and drafting Patrick Surtain. We knew they had a pass rush. They're also overcoming injuries at the wide receiver spot. But I have been saying this for a year. I love this roster. They just make too many mistakes with Drew Locke. So I know I'm overvaluing them, but I think in a one-game situational moment against the team, everybody in the league, if you had to go to Denver and play today, you would be in a game for the final 30 seconds. I think they've got a lot of things going for them.
Number 3.
Tampa Bay. Their pass rush now is increasingly hit and miss. Their pass defense, they've got some injuries in the back end, is not very good. But Brady leads the NFL in touchdown passes with 10. I've got a championship team. It is not a shock that one side of the ball for a championship team when everybody got the bag is a little soft. I trust Todd Bowles. I trust Bruce Arians. The pass rush, which may be much better this weekend, I feel the same way about Washington and Tampa. Where's the pass rush? The personnel's there. Where's the pass rush? I think they'll get there.
Number 2.
I love the Buffalo Bills organization top to bottom. Ownership, top to bottom. Ownership, GM, coach, quarterback. Listen, 5 of the last 6 regular season games they've played, they've scored 35-plus points. They got everything. They can go slot. They can run it. He can run it. By the way, they have solved the number one issue they had last year, and it was a real issue. They had no pass rush. They now are 7th in the NFL in sacks. They have aggressively tried to upgrade that position via the draft in the last 2 years. They have an excellent GM, and they've hit in a couple of picks. So this is a high-scoring team that has solved their issue.
Number 1.
I don't know what to say about the Rams. I thought Kevin Clark at the Ringer nailed it. They no longer have to throw on play action. They just drop back and throw it deep. That is the advantage of Matt Stafford. I don't see the weakness. Now, I do believe their offensive line needs healthy tackles. Halverstein and Andrew Whitworth are really good. They're the 3rd highest rated offensive line. They're not as iconic as the Cowboys' O-line. Maybe not as talented on the interior as that Eagles' great O-line several years ago, but this is a really good offensive line. They've got over-the-top receivers. Sony Michel has filled in nicely for the injured Cam Akers. I don't see a weakness right here. I don't. By the way, Sean McVay is one of the best scheming coaches in the league. Translation, they score early in games. And when they lead at half, they're 40-0 under McVay. It's a great recipe. It's the Bill Walsh Niners recipe, which, by the way, Sean McVay, his family comes from Bill Walsh. They scheme the first 12 plays. They take a lead. If they can hold the lead to half, they never lose under McVay. 40-0 when leading at half. It's a good recipe for success. And with that, the brother of Derek Carr, David Carr, is now joining us live from the NFL Network. All right, I know I'm completely overvaluing the Denver Broncos. I know I am. I'm out of my mind. But I will say, there is value knowing not only what you are in life, but what you're not. And I want to credit, I thought Dak showed that last night. Dak, 72 starts. He now knows when to kill a play. He knows when to throw it away. Bridgewater's got that ability. So your takeaway on just, let's just talk Denver for a second. A roster I love. Maybe the quarterback's got a ceiling. Is that the one team I've just lost my mind on?
Yeah, I think so. I like the Broncos as well. I like their roster. I like all their pieces. I think what you said about their defense is spot on. I think when you add Fuller and you add Surtain to an already pretty good secondary with Von Miller coming back, I mean, that's what Derek also talks about, is Von Miller's back. Like, the Broncos defense is going to be the Broncos defense, and now they've kind of fixed those other pieces. It really is Teddy. Like, what is his ceiling? That's really what we're asking. And what I have been surprised and almost encouraged watching him, because I like Teddy also. He came out when Derek came out. He went to Minnesota. Derek went a couple picks later to the Raiders. You know, so they know each other well. Always rooted for him, even through his leg injury. He's making the dynamic plays that he hasn't made in the past. You know, and he's still able to take care of the football. So that is a big plus. I love Vic Fangio. I knew him when he was in Houston. He was my defensive coordinator. That guy really believes he can guess the offense's play every time. And you know what? He does it. He does it a lot. Yeah. So I think that that's a hidden gem that the Broncos have kind of in their back pocket, where you got to take them for real. Where's the Chargers, though? That's the only thing. The Chargers?
Okay, I have the Chargers.
Where are the Chargers?
I have the Chargers at 11 and Carolina at 12. I want to see Sam Darnold trail in a football game, and
that's
he
fair.
Will against Dallas. And the Chargers, 12 penalties, butchered that Cowboy game. They should have won it at home.
You know, and situationally, they're pretty bad, too. Honestly, like, that's the other thing that I think young head coach, he's still trying to figure it out. Like, they almost threw that Kansas City game away down by the goal line. There were some questionable things that they did, but he'll learn. He'll get better at that. But Justin Herbert, man, at least he's others receiving votes. I feel good about that he's running.
David Carr. Okay, let's talk about Derek. So, you know, I've said this before, is I defended Tony Romo for years. I knew I was right. And now, in hindsight, everybody's like, yeah, Tony Romo was pretty good. And I've said this with your brother. I'm like, because he went to Fresno, he didn't go to Alabama, because he wasn't a top five pick, the team he inherited was garbage. And so people, they don't like that. They want to see you enter the league, go to a good team. And like, you know, Jared Goff enters, you know, pretty soon, McVay. So Derek's had to overcome a lot in his career, and now he's really rolling. When did you know, with the Gruden thing, when did you feel like, because you were talking to your brother, that it's going to work, and they're in unison, and this thing is going to work? Because I was a doubter.
I didn't know right away. I would be lying to you if I said that. I think it did take me a while, because they butted heads for a while. You know, Derek had ideas. He had gone through a lot of coordinators. John had been out of the league for a long time. Not that Derek thought this, but there was the feeling of, you have to show us that you're current, because the offense has changed, but John has definitely done that. I remember the very first conversation where I knew Derek was sold on John. He came to me, he's like, dude, we just broke down these combination routes and bunch routes, and he had an answer for everything. And the packages that he put together and the way that they run their offense, you know, Derek grew up watching me play against Peyton Manning, you know, and Gruden is a big Peyton Manning fan, and he loved his controlled line of scrimmage. And if I had to say that Derek does one thing as good as Peyton Manning, it's that. He understands what he's seeing, his understanding of the defensive structure and what they're trying to do and what your offense is capable of doing from a leverage standpoint and where to go with the ball. He's as good as anyone I've ever been around. I watched Peyton do it for 5 years playing against him. I've watched Derek do it his whole life. The dude has a crazy good processor, and he understands things. He never forgets things. Gruden says he has a photographic memory, whatever that means. I don't even know if that's real or not. How you can test for that. But that's the one thing that Derek and John Gruden are on the same page about. He knows what John wants to do, and he executes that on the field. And that's why John says he's so ecstatic about Derek. He's been saying that he's the guy forever, and no one's been listening to him, because he's basically just John Gruden on the field. He takes what John wants to have happen in his brain, and he puts it on the field and makes it happen. So I was kind of sold at that point when I heard Derek just raving about the knowledge that John had. And that was several years ago. So you look at him now, I mean, defensively, that's really the big difference. They haven't even played great on offense.
Yeah. You know, I was watching all these young quarterbacks, and they're all unraveling and flailing because, of course, it's really, really hard. I mean, Dak and Jalen Hurts last night. Dak's playing a different sport. I mean, Dak is patient. I mean, it's just different. You can't ask these kids at 22 to walk into this sport, and it, you may not even have the right coach or the right O-line like the Jets. Trevor Lawrence, what would be the best advice? Because I think he's the most gifted of all the young guys. The size, the whip, the movement. What would be your – if you could sit down and say, here's one or two things, Trevor. I went through it. Here's my advice.
I think the biggest thing, when I watched him play against the Cardinals the other day, and I was pulling for him, and they had a lead in the third quarter, and they're starting to figure it out. And I loved what Urban and those guys did offensively. They were running the football better. They were asking to throw it in controlled situations. And then they throw the flea flicker. And, like, I get it. You want to try and make a big play. And Trevor tries to make a play to win the game. The play wasn't open. He was falling away, and he forced it, pick six, game over, pretty much. So that's the one thing that I would say to Trevor. And Troy Aikman said it to me at a dinner, actually, at the Super Bowl in Houston when it was being hosted. We were hosting it there. And I'm sitting down with him, and he's like, hey, man, let me just tell you, your team's not ready yet. I don't know if anyone's told you that, but I think that that's important. I think someone needs to tell Trevor that his team is not there yet. So what your job is to understand that and be real about it, and don't be the reason that you lose games early, and then be the reason that you win games late. And how do you do that? It's by being ready when your team is ready. So your team's not there yet. Eventually they will be. But if you regress and you start trying to force issues and make game-losing plays, you're not ever going to be able to be in the position where you're the guy, because as soon as your team is ready to be that team, they're going to get another quarterback. I don't think Trevor is going to be in that situation where he has to worry about that. He's a talented guy. I like watching him. I think the issue with him is he's never lost. He's in a situation. I remember being there. You're losing. What do? I have to make a play. I'm just going to force the issue. I have to do something, because, I mean, when's the last time he lost three games in a row? That's literally never happened in his life. Probably not even in Madden. So it's like, I have to try to make this happen, and you end up hurting your team. So your team's not there yet. You have to understand that. Someone has to be real with him and tell him that. And just, it's a process.
So I said, you know, it took me two games. I was a little skeptical about Kyler Murray on his size. It took me a second start. I came in the next day on the air and said, yeah, that's going to work. I didn't buy all the Burrow hype. I thought he would be fine. After the second game, I came in the following Monday and went, that's going to work. And I knew Tebow two starts in. I came on the air and I was like, that's not going to work. And I don't care that he won. It's not going to work. I got to be honest, David, I watched Jalen Hurts last night. I don't know if he's consistently accurate enough. He missed three layups last night. That's just my interpretation. He'll run around and make plays. But, God, you got to be accurate in this league. I don't know. What did you see? I don't know if he is.
I really like Jalen's ability to not let the moment get to him. I like the fact that he's calm in the pocket. And he does at times leave early.
Yeah.
So that's his default. He just bounces out when you really shouldn't. And I know that, like, that's what he's done his whole life, because he's probably been the best athlete on the field. And that everyone's going to revert back to what they're best at and what they've done their whole life to survive. Quarterback's playing, it's survival. You're surviving. So after the X's and O's, now it's survival mode. So what do you use? Like, Brady's edge is, I'm going to be more accurate, and I'm going to make a better decision than the other guys. Okay, that's his edge, and that's worked out. And if you look at all the really good quarterbacks over time, they're incredibly accurate, and they throw with great anticipation. That is the knock for me on Jalen, is he doesn't trust and throw guys open, which you have to do to win in this league consistently. He trusts his legs, and, I mean, rightfully so, makes a lot of plays, but he trusts his legs, and he wants to see the play open first. Or he does something like that, and he kind of just throws it blindly. So I think that there's room for improvement. I don't know what his ceiling is. I know athletically it's very high, but, like, that play also, that was another blind throw. And you even heard the broadcast team. They're saying you just can't let that thing go. You know, Peyton, I was watching the Peyton Manning and Eli chat about that exact play. You just can't let it go without seeing a little bit of how that corner is just sitting there. So, you know, that for me is going to be the thing that they're going to have to work through. Unfortunately, he has to work through it in a live game on a national stage where – you know, you don't have that luxury, you know, to kind of sit and watch someone do it. So I don't know if he's going to be able to kind of work through that, you know, in a live situation.
Thursday Night Football, NFL Network, Jags, Bengals. I'm actually interested because I want to watch the quarterbacks. His name is David Carr. It's great seeing you as always, my man.
You too, man. Thanks.
David Carr, good insight on Derek and Gruden. Wasn't that great? Real insight on that. I want you to stay current. You got to prove to me that you're current. You know what? That's what Ann always tells to me. It's nice to know that Gruden and Derek Carr have the same conversations.
Stay current.
Say, honey, stay current. Don't be one of those old stodgy broadcasters. You got to stay current.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Tired of waiting for hot water? Go to tanklessmadesimple.com. Get a Navien tankless water heater. 15-year limited warranty. Let's not waste any time. Joy Taylor with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Well, the rookie quarterbacks and young quarterbacks have been a big point of conversation through the offseason and through the first 3 weeks of the season. Fans would like to see more of their rookie quarterbacks. But Alex Smith, someone who was mentioned in conjunction with a successful rookie quarterback waiting, talked about why he's not so sure they should rush their young quarterbacks out there.
And I really felt like it set me back. I mean, my first start was a disaster. I feel like I had no business being out there. I mean, I threw 4 interceptions my first start, and it didn't get much better after that.
See, that's my guy.
Look, I mean, everyone loves Alex Smith. He's the best. But again, I don't know how much you learn from, we used to say holding the clipboard, it's holding a tablet now. Observation. There's almost, there's only so much you can absorb from observation.
Okay, so let's take the telescope and turn it around.
Okay.
So there's only so much you can learn from observation. True. But instead of humiliation, instead of observation, how much do you hurt a quarterback when he literally is devoured for 6 straight weeks? So I agree, observation. In moments in life, you could watch somebody do an exercise I'm not losing
calories. You have internships, mentorships. Like, those things have extreme value.
But I think if, like in Chicago, I do not trust that offensive line. I think it's awful.
There's no reason to. He got sacked 9 times.
Yeah. So to me, you have to weigh, okay, he's not learning a lot, but I'm not going to humiliate him. Like, that's why I think sometimes with young quarterbacks, I look and I think, okay, we've got a bye and the Lions coming to town. And I'm like, I almost feel like with my kids, I they're going to fail in life, but I always tell them, I'm trying to set you up for some success. I'm not saying you're going to, but I don't want to put you in a prep school if you're totally over your skis. You know, if I took my daughter and said, I'm going to put you to a tech school. She's like, Dad, I don't like tech. Then I'm setting her up to fail.
Right, but if she wanted to be in tech, she'd have to go to the tech school. So, like, they are quarterbacks. They have to play the position at some point.
But I argue, not if you have Nick Foles. You're not a playoff team anyway.
Yes, I don't know. I guess I'm firmly on the other side of this, that because you aren't a playoff team, because I don't think this is the situation in San Francisco. They have a rookie quarterback who we know is the future. But there's, to me, what's the point? Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy. We know what he's capable of.
Yeah.
And you can actually win with that roster. Now, if it was Chicago, where we know they're not going to win with that roster, I don't think it's the same situation. So I don't think it's a blanket statement. I think each individual situation has some nuance to it.
Yeah.
And look, the rookie quarterbacks are struggling. If you look at the numbers from Sunday, Justin Fields, 6 of 20, no touchdowns, 0 interceptions, sacked 9 times. Mac Jones, 1 touchdown, 3 interceptions, sacked twice. Zach Wilson, 0 interceptions, 0 touchdowns,
terrible.
2 interceptions, sacked 5 times. And then Trevor Lawrence was sacked 3 times with 1 touchdown and 2 interceptions. Yes, it's brutal. But also, I believe that, you know, just all of us collectively in the sports world need to be patient with these young guys.
That's like asking kids not to take the cookie if you put it in front of them.
But it's just nonsense, though.
Well, of course, but asking people to be, we can't even ask people to get a vaccine. I mean, seriously.
Right. I might be being too reasonable right now. I mean, that's just how I look at it. Like, I have no expectations for the Jags this year. The only thing I want to see in year one is some growth.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, anything other than that, I think, is an extreme overreaction. They wouldn't be in the situation to have a first-round rookie quarterback that high if they were a good team.
Yeah.
Unless you are the Kansas City Chiefs who's trading up for Patrick Mahomes and then didn't play him anyway, or you're Baltimore, Lamar Jackson. If you are taking a quarterback that high in the draft, you're not a good team. So you probably don't have an offensive line. So you are going to struggle. I just think it's just a sprinkle of patience, guys. I know I'm asking for a reason, which is outrageous. But so Bill Belichick knows what is at the forefront of everyone's mind this weekend. We are starting to sprinkle in the stories leading up to Tom Brady getting back to New England. But you're going to hear about this all week. And by Friday, it's going to be all you can talk about. But he was asked yesterday if his feelings towards Tom ever changed, and he said that he would have loved for Tom to stay.
Well, I think we've been through all the dynamics of that. You know, he looked at his options and made his decision. We weren't as good an option as Tampa. It wasn't a question of not wanting them, that's for sure.
Well, they weren't. Tampa had better skill people, and Belichick and his staff had whiffed on multiple tight ends and receivers. So, I mean, that's honesty. Tampa was a better option based on the personnel for an aging quarterback. And as we've said, when you age, you need more help. Tom would not be this good with the Jaguars. Like,
no,
he needs...
but Bill kind of slyly put it on Tom that he left. You know, I think that overall most Patriots fans outside of this weekend, at least last year, were happy for Tom.
Like, of course.
I don't think there was a lot of animosity about it. But over the next couple years, if the Patriots are not good consistently, all that love might start to fade. Like, right now, I still think, you know, they have a overall respect for him, which you should. But that was Bill putting it on Tom. Like, Tom left us. We wanted Tom back.
You know, I think Bill misses? Bill misses those high-level conversations you can have with an 18-year veteran quarterback. Because now you're back to being a school teacher. And Belichick, intellectually, is more like a professor than a school teacher. So he goes from these incredibly deep conversations with Brady, Josh McDaniels, that were so high level, most teams could only aspire to those conversations on a weekly basis. And now you're back to being a school teacher, just teaching basic geography to a quarterback. And I think that's the part, deep down, Bill would never maybe admit it, but that's fun to be sparring with somebody and learning with somebody that can play at your level. Now it's teaching. He wasn't teaching Brady football. They were wrestling over which brilliant plan to use or moment.
Well, he has to start all over again, which I find to be fascinating. Brady and the Bucs are currently favored by the Patriots over the Patriots 6.5, according to Fox Bet.
I would take New England. All right. Yeah.
You would take New England?
Oh, excuse me. I can't get the Brady's not a Patriot. I would take Tampa by 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, that seeing Tom Brady on the sideline of that game.
Rookie quarterbacks.
But does any of the emotion come into play for you?
Yeah, it makes Mac Jones nervous, not Brady. Matt Stafford was nervous facing Brady on a big TV game. Mac Jones isn't going to be nervous? Tom not going to be nervous.
But I'm saying the emotion from Tom's side.
Oh, Tom's emotion is, I'm going to crush you, LFG. That's Tom's emotion.
I mean, I guess. I think there might be something to it, him coming back to the building for the first time. But I would tend to agree with you. I think that they're going to cover that. So the Eagles fell to the Cowboys 41-21 last night, and Jalen Hurts is ready to shoulder the blame for his team's disappointing performance.
I didn't do a good enough job of leading. I didn't do a good enough job of running our offense, of doing the things that I need to do. So it's on me. This one's on me. You take you a deuce, you don't sit there and look at it. You flush it and move on. We're going to flush it and move on.
Oh, good. That was wonderful.
Very descriptive.
Thank you.
Well, he was 25 of 39 for 326 passing yards with 2 touchdowns. Both of those were kind of garbage time touchdowns.
Yeah.
In his first 2 picks of the season, he also had 9 carries of the Eagles' 12 rushing plays, running for 35 yards. I don't know that I'm putting that entire loss on Jalen Hurts, though.
I don't know. I didn't like what I saw, but I don't know if they have the coach right either. I'll just say that.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, it's 3 weeks in, and maybe we were a little overreaction, you know, a little bit of an overreaction to how they played so far. And I also think that, and this is not an overreaction by me because I felt like the Cowboys were going to win this division to begin with.
Yeah.
The Cowboys are a good team.
Yeah, like, I was shocked it was a blowout. I was shocked it was not competitive. I will admit that.
I was it would a little be surprised it wasn't competitive as well, but maybe we aren't giving the Cowboys defense enough credit.
That's fair. No, they've got 8 takeaways. And listen, we said this after the first week. The eye test. They are a much rangier, faster defense.
Yeah.
That is not up for. They're younger, they're rangier, and they're not even healthy. They're missing guys up front. So,
but their playmakers made plays.
Yes, and they've got that Diggs, that corner's tremendous. Yeah. Looks like a Pro Bowl corner. So let's give them credit.
They're better than last year. No. You have to forget what they were last year, which is obviously abysmal. They are better, and you're supposed to take advantage of inferior teams when you have an improved side of the ball, which they do.
All right, good stuff. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Live.
So on the Manning cast last night, LeBron James came on, and he admitted the Seahawks' Pete Carroll and Jerry Jones sent him a jersey right? Like a couple years ago, they sent him a jersey when LeBron was, you know, kind of sitting there with the contract situation. Here's LeBron.
That's true. Jerry Jones offered me a contract. Also, Pete Carroll did as well in Seattle during our lockout time. And it definitely got my blood flowing again, got my mind racing again, thinking about the game of football, you know, being out there on Sundays. But, you know, we was able to get a deal done in the NBA, and I was back on the court in no time.
By the way, I don't want to get into MJ-LeBron debate, but LeBron would have been an exceptional NFL player because he's a natural comp. For the record, LeBron is 3 inches taller than Michael Jordan and on average 50 pounds heavier. And with a body that has only 4-5% body fat, LeBron James could toss Michael Jordan around like a crouton in a salad bowl. He's a much bigger, stronger athlete. That is not up for dispute. But what LeBron James could be, we can see it in the NFL. It's called Jimmy Graham. Jimmy Graham is 6'7", 260. That's what LeBron would look like, but far more athletic. Graham played basketball too. He was okay. We have a comp for what LeBron would be. A more athletic, rangier, faster, more nimble athlete than Jimmy Graham, a multiple-time Pro Bowler. To give you an idea, Michael Jordan looks skinny as a baseball player. LeBron would fit in the NFL. Michael Jordan is 6'6 and listed at 195. Let's round it up to 200. To give you an idea how skinny would Michael look in the NFL, Odell Beckham is 6.5 inches shorter than Michael Jordan and weighs 195. And we think Odell Beckham is too thin at times and nimble. We think he's a little thin. Add 6.5 inches to Odell Beckham. That would not be an NFL player. So LeBron could absolutely flourish as a professional athlete in another sport. Michael was too skinny as a baseball player. Michael's 6.5, 195, let's say 200. Well, Aaron Judge, he's 6.5 and 285. You ever see those Michael Jordan, Barry Bonds standing next to each other pictures? Michael looked, it was like licorice. He was like a breadstick. He's skinny. So LeBron is a way better athlete than Michael Jordan. It ain't close. It ain't even close. LeBron has a prototype in the NFL, and he would be bigger and stronger than that prototype and faster and jump higher. Michael would be Odell Beckham with 6 inches. That doesn't make the league. Odell struggles to stay healthy. It's The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, I'm Doug Gottlieb. The podcast is called All Ball. We usually talk all basketball all the time, but it's more about the stories about what made these people love their sport and all the interesting interactions along the way. We talk to coaches. We talk to players. We tell you stories. You download it. You listen to it. I think you'll like it. Listen to All Ball with Doug Gottlieb on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andrew Whitworth, 16th NFL season, 11 with the Bengals, 5 with the Rams, allowed one sack on 101 pass-blocking snaps this year, according to Pro Football Focus. Still one of the top one or two guys at his position, joining us live after that really buttoned-up win over Tampa. I thought you guys played as well, I said this the other day, yesterday, as any team has played in a singular game this year. When did you feel, at what point in the game, Andrew, did you feel like, man, we are sharp today? We are really buttoned up.
You know, I think it's one of those things you start to feel as the week goes on. Obviously, throughout my career, you've played in a lot of big games, a lot of big moments. But really feeling, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, not just the way things were executed or how practices went, but just kind of the energy and the attitude guys had of like, hey, this is a chance for us to prove, you know, against a really good football team that we're one of the best football teams this season, because that's the season we're in and it's all that matters. And we get to say, this is where we are and who we are at this point in the year. And I think guys were excited for that op, and it showed in the way we played and the way we executed as a team.
Yeah, incredible urgency. You know, my interpretation is you're doing more straight drops as a team, less play action. Matt, get back there, 7 steps, find the targets. That's what it feels like to me. Less deception, more line them up, Let's see what we got. Am I wrong, right? Tell me what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, we really are. I think we're a team now that we're kind of just dropping back with the quarterback and letting him be special like he is. And up front, you know what, it's a different thing. Now we're really working on pass protection and having the ability to give him time and the chance to make those plays. And that part of the, you know, really for us offensively has been the biggest, you know, bright spot for us, is that we started this season protecting the quarterback, letting him make plays and showing the talent and ability he has. And I think really the relationship between Sean and him is really showing up as they're able to kind of pull on each other and ideas and philosophies for how to attack defenses. And so far it's showed up really in our passing game.
You played Tampa last year, by the way, and the defense to me felt more aggressive. Tampa's defense this year, it's not the same. Some of it JPP's injury, but as a tackle, what was Tampa's defense last year that won a Super Bowl, dominated the Super Bowl, and Tampa's defense this year? What's the difference? Because the numbers tell you it's not the same.
Yeah, I think really you look at it last year, probably the first half of the season, they were a team that really you saw more from a standpoint of bringing more pressures, really aggressive at certain times in the season. And as the season kind of went down and they got in the playoffs, I think you really look at the numbers, it kind of looks like they brought less and less pressures and played more, you know, move to the next down type defense, like bend but don't break. And Tom Brady and obviously their offense were extremely hot there the last part of the season. And I think that was kind of the style they played with. And this year, I think you've kind of seen a mixture of both, but really it's been more of relying on their great pass rushers up front and a little less bringing pressure. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, if you protect against those guys and give a quarterback time, you know, eventually people are going to get open. And we were able to do that Sunday. Obviously, JPP being out was a huge miss for them, because what a great player he is and has been for quite some time. But, you know, when you're able to hold up against a team that's not bringing as many guys, eventually people are going to be open, especially with the skill players we have and really with the job that Matthew Stafford's doing at quarterback.
I mean, Cooper Kupp is putting up Jerry Rice numbers, Randy Moss. He went to my alma mater, Eastern Washington University, the Harvard of the Palouse, it should be noted. But, you know, Cooper's one of those guys. I tell my buddies, he's way faster than people think. He gets out of routes really quick. And is it by design Cooper's numbers are so great this year? Is it just luck of the draw? The coverages are dictating it. He is putting up monster numbers. Why?
Well, I think his you know, ability to produce after the catch has always been there. And then obviously what he does for us is down in and down out in the running game, passing game, everything. But one of the things I noticed this week is on Friday when we finished practice, I watched Matthew and him sit in the corner for about 35 minutes after practice. Everybody's going home, hurrying to get home on a Friday. And those two are just talking about different plays, coverages they've seen in different games and how, you know what, you could kind of beat it even though this route's called or that route's called. I think I could sit over here or I could make this break and hit it. You know, I just think they really pull on each other, and you got a guy in Cooper who's not only got the skill set to play the position, but really mentally he's like a quarterback. He feels coverages, he sees it, he knows where to be and when to be there and how he can manipulate defenders. And I think that really that relationship those two have right now and the ability – to really be there for one another and count on one another in certain situations and games is producing not just the normal things that Cooper does, but also getting him those possessions and those opportunities where maybe he wouldn't have normally been a target, but Matthew trusts where he's going to be and delivers him the football.
By the way, SoFi Stadium is just a magnificent facility. I know you're playing and you got your helmet on, but do you ever look around and think, God, this place is majestic. This is an incredible stadium.
It really is, and it was loud. I mean, I think for me, being in L.A. the time I've been here, you know, for a regular season game, that was the loudest and greatest environment I've played in, and I think that it's going to be a really special place for years to come. And I know you heard some remarks from their team and also ours of just what it felt like in there, the energy, the fans. I'll tell you what, we're excited about the opportunity right now because it can be an advantage for us and something we really haven't had since we've played here.
Yeah, Andrew Whitworth, Rams face Arizona next on Fox. That will be a wild, wild game. Can't wait for it. Great seeing you, Andrew.
Hey, look forward to it. I appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah, that's going to be a wild one. It's going to be crazy. So, you know, it's fun out west. The Cardinals are better than a lot of people thought. The Raiders are better than a lot of people thought. Denver's better than a lot of people thought. And out east, the teams all stink, except Buffalo. The Eastern Seaboard has had a bad run. Philadelphia's a mess. Washington's not as good as we thought. Both New York teams stink. Thank God for the Buffalo Bills. Number two in the herd hierarchy.
Buccaneers are out east. They're doing all right.
Who's that?
Buccaneers are out east. I know they're an NFC team.
I'm talking the Northeast.
Well, yeah.
Christopher Columbus landed there. It started it all. Terrible. They've had a bad run, haven't they?
The Patriots dynasty was there.
Yeah, I guess they count. Plymouth Rock's down the road. Yeah, you're right about that. I back up. I know a lot of people will freak out when I said this, though, about LeBron Michael. No, but I'm not going to get into best basketball player. But when LeBron talks about this, Pete Carroll and Jerry Jones offered him a deal. He played football like in high school as like a freshman or sophomore. He was all state in Ohio. He was great.
Yeah, it's not unrealistic that he could do that.
Like now, Michael,
the question is obviously, would he be able to take those hits? Which I'm sure he wouldn't love to, but most receivers or tight ends avoid collisions as much as they can. He wouldn't be able to block, I don't believe. He's not going to be a blocking tight end.
I mean, look at him. He's a ridiculous athlete. He's throwing flea flickers. But there's a comp for his body
Jimmy
in
Graham.
Sports. Jimmy Graham is his comp, and he'd be a better athlete than Jimmy Graham, who played basketball. Antonio Gates, similarly, there's a comp. Michael's comp is Odell Beckham, and imagine if same weight, if Odell Beckham was 6.5 inches taller. He's not an NFL body. Michael looks skinny as a baseball. Michael's great basketball player. He tried baseball. It didn't work.
I think Mike's pretty tough.
I'm not saying tough, but you can be toughest guy in the world. Do you have the body type for your sport? Michael didn't look like he didn't have the body for baseball. You think? I didn't think so.
I don't know.
I think I know. I don't know. Hour three next.